Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks Sunday, March 12th, 2017. This is episode 1371. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality, augmented reality, reality, real reality. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. I know. It feels like it's this. I'm here at the wrong time, doesn't it? 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I'm a little groggy. Are you groggy? We sprang forward last night. My friend Clayton Morris at Fox and Friends is on a massive campaign, which I heartily support, to eliminate this insanity called daylight saving time. Actually, I would prefer to keep daylight saving time and eliminate standard time, but let's just stop one way or the other, right? On the Monday after daylight saving starts, tomorrow, in other words, heart attacks will go up 24% tomorrow. 24%. That's not a coincidence. Traffic accidents go up. Judges dole out harsher sentences. Employees are more likely to cyberloaf on the internet. Oh, and by the way, in November, when we go back to standard time, street crime goes up. So does traffic accidents involving wildlife. Researchers in Australia, this is not funny, have calculated that extending daylight saving there throughout the year, in other words, eliminating the time change this fall, would reduce the number of koalas killed by motorists by 8%. Think of the koalas. We have a chance to make America great again this fall. Eliminate the time change, I beg of you. Please, think of the koalas. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm fine. I'm okay now. It does have a technological angle, I'm sure. Let me think of it. Oh, yeah. You don't have to set your clocks so much anymore, do you? In fact, you know now what the high-tech parts of your house are and the low-tech parts. I have to go set the clock on the oven and the microwave and the cuckoo clock. I had to change the time there. Everything else knows. Sure, yeah. Your computers know. Your phone knows. That's kind of nice, isn't it? Your phone is an accurate timepiece. It automatically keeps time perfectly and even adjusts for daylight saving time, even adjusts correctly. Now, you know you're in the worst technological nightmare if you have something that changes the time on the wrong day. And there are a lot of kind of, those are in-between devices. Refrigerators that were, you know, oh, this is high tech. These refrigerator connects to the internet. But then they never updated the software. And when President Bush changed the day, the calendar day for daylight saving time, there was nothing to fix the software. So those of you with those devices, you have to wait now a couple of weeks. Oh, there's my phone ringing. That's another thing that doesn't change. You see, let's add that to the statistics. 24% more heart attacks and 33% more people forgetting to turn off their smartphone, their ringer during performances. And think of the watches that will break this day as people set their watch. Yes, Snick in our chat room says, last year, I broke the stem on my Movado watch, setting it needlessly, costing me $150. Think of the koalas. Think of the heart attacks. Think of the Movado watches. Change.org has a petition. I don't know if that makes any difference or not. Petitions seem like they don't really have. In fact, I don't even know. I guess we probably have more important things to be worried about, you know, in Congress. They're working on health care and all that stuff. Just take a couple of minutes off and just end the insanity, will you? And by the way, there was a, you know, the whole point of this was actually the notion of, it's worth reading the Wikipedia article on daylight saving time. Because, of course, they'll mention Ben Franklin because he was the first person to mention it. But it wasn't widely used until World War I to save energy resources. And it wasn't federally adopted in the United States until, believe it or not, 1966. It's only 50 years old. This isn't written in stone. In 1966, and the idea was it was to save energy, but there's no evidence that it does so at all. Because the electricity that isn't used to power, you know, lights in businesses at night is offset by the rising use of air conditioning and lighting at home. You have electricity at home and work now. So it doesn't really matter. Farmers don't care. In fact, farmers hate it. If you're a dairy farmer, I live in dairy country, they hate it because humans change their time, but the cows don't know. So they're getting milked an hour later or an hour earlier, and they don't like that. There are 24 bills pending in state legislatures. New Hampshire, Maine, Rhode Island all want to move the Atlantic states from Eastern time to Atlantic Standard Time, which will put them an hour ahead of New York, but on the same time as Nova Scotia and Labrador. But the New Hampshire bill says we're only going to do it if Massachusetts does it too. Okay. Ay. It's utter nonsense. Thank you, Fritz. You probably saw, and certainly there's been a lot of talk about Vault 7. This was a cache of CIA purported, allegedly, we don't know for sure, but I think it probably is the case, CIA documents for CIA hacking tools, over 8,000 pages, so no one has had time to read it all. Well, maybe some people have. If you read nonstop since last week, I certainly haven't. I've skimmed it and looked at the relevant parts. It looks real. It shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that various parts of our government are developing tools to spy. A couple of takeaways, though, very important, and because some of the story of Vault 7 was misreported early on. Takeaway one is that all of these tools are not mass surveillance tools like the tools that you might have seen from the NSA, from the Snowden breach. These are targeted tools for the most part, as far as we can tell, used to, if you say, I want to see Dmitry over there, I want to know if he's up to no good. Okay, well, here's what you would do. You break into his house and you plant bugs in the wall and the lights. And oh, by the way, now you can also plant a bug in his Samsung television stick, television set. Here's the USB drive. Just plug that into the side. That kind of thing. They're tools for targeted surveillance. Some reporting said that the CIA papers said they had cracked what we have thought to be secure messaging programs. Signal, WhatsApp, and Telegram. That's not the case if you read it closely. What the CIA did is create tools that would allow them to get onto your phone before you send the message and read it before it's encrypted, not in transit. That's a lot harder to do. And that's, in a way, encouraging. The folks who create Signal said, this shows this stuff is working. It's forced espionage and law enforcement and bad guys, too, to compromise with expensive targeted attacks as opposed to mass surveillance. So you don't need to set your hair on fire about this Vault 7 leak. This is what you'd expect. It's nothing outrageous, as far as I can tell. And good news, if you are using encrypted messaging and Signal's the best of the bunch, you're still private. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. She was here an hour early. Kim Schaffer, the phone ranger. Do you hate this as much as I do? I don't. It's really hit me harder than I expected.
I don't think it's that big of a deal, but I do hate it. And I hated it more when I worked Sunday mornings at 5 a.m. in the city at a radio station.
Yeah.
It was brutal then.
Yeah.
Having to be here at 11
one
is
hour
a little
early.
Bit of a different story. But back then, it was really hard. I don't mind falling back, but springing forward sucks.
Yeah, I don't mind getting an extra hour, but losing that hour is not good.
Yeah.
Not good. And there's actually consequences to it.
Yeah.
But it seems like such a trivial thing. I don't know. I mean, we have so many bigger
go to bed a little earlier.
Fish to fry.
Some people are whining.
I did. I went to bed at 9.
Did you?
Yeah.
I tried, but I had a
Well, your body doesn't know what it is, right? Your body's
a fiesta next door.
So I heard. So this is the other thing that's really kind of awesome about social media is I know.
You knew I was going to be tired today.
You were going to, because I heard the party, because you streamed it on Facebook.
And I used to work at a Mexican radio station, so I know that music.
You know the songs.
But it
well, you've got festive neighbors, and you know, I thought you probably should just go over.
Go over and shoot back some tequila.
Yeah,
right?
Enjoy it. And say, I don't have to work in the morning. Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, I do.
Kim Schaffer's here to answer your call.
I'm here.
And if you have a call for Kim, 8888 Ask Leo, and she will answer. She's such a nice person. And then prepare you for your appearance on the radio.
I was going to say, and then I will put you on hold.
And you'll be on hold for a very,
for an
very long
time.
Very long time, because there's so many calls. And Leo is such a gas bag. Do you tell him that? You say, be prepared. It's going to be a long time, because Leo is a wind bag.
I've used different words. I don't think I've ever used gas bag. No guarantees.
You have my permission. You have my permission. So who should I take first here?
Lisa in Channel Hills has a photo storage question.
All right. Thank you, Kim. Hi, Lisa. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hey, I got a question. First off, I'm not a fan of the cloud.
Okay. I'm not a fan of the cloud.
What's the best place to store photos? I've got them on CDs. I've got them on thumb drives. I've got them on my hard drive. But 20 years from now,
the cloud.
Where?
I'll tell you why. So if you think about it, 10 years ago, if you'd stored stuff on zip disks, that would have seemed sensible then. Those are inexpensive. They hold, you know, hundreds of megabytes. And then today, what would you do with them? You'd have to find a zip drive. Good luck.
Right.
And that's the problem. I mean, CDs are, you know, everybody has CD readers, or at least they did a couple of years ago. Now they're starting to fade out. 10 years, 20 years, I don't know. Hard drives, well, that's tricky, because first of all, 20 years from now, will we even have hard drives? They certainly won't connect the same way, so you'd have to have an adapter so you could connect them. And then would you be able to read them? Would the file format be compatible? The reason the cloud is a good way to do it is because that becomes then the responsibility of the people who run the cloud, Microsoft or Google or Apple, whoever is running. You're still storing it, by the way, just so you know, it's still being stored on a hard drive on a computer somewhere in a data center somewhere. But it's incumbent upon them to make sure you can read it next year and 10 years from now and 20 years from now, unless they go out of business.
Right.
Okay. So generally, I'll give you some alternatives, not cloud, but that's why cloud is the argument, is you don't have to worry about the format. And one good thing is that the file format is probably going to survive. Graphics file formats do not change as rapidly as data storage formats. So the JPEG that you're storing your photos in now will almost certainly be readable in 20 years. You might have to, you know, get a special piece of software, but there will be so many JPEGs out there that I can't imagine they won't be readable. The best way to archive anything is to print it.
Yeah.
Our eyes aren't going to change.
Right.
But then, well, you got to put it on acid-free paper so it doesn't degrade. You got to keep it out of the sunlight, maybe store it in a climate-controlled, you know, facility. So, but paper will last the longest. It's also the least convenient.
Right.
Takes up space. You can't search it. Many of us have paper. We have shoeboxes full of prints in our closet. And every once in a while, it's kind of fun. You pull it down and you go through them. Oh, I remember that. And then you put them back. And then, you know, you don't, they're not as accessible. So you could get a hard, I mean, if you're saying, I will not put it on the cloud, I will not. You could get a hard drive. And, but then the burden is on you every few years to make sure that you can still read that hard drive. You probably should get more than one because hard drives die. So two or maybe even three is a good idea. And then every, you know, put it on your calendar every few years to make sure that you can still read all the files on there. And if USB starts to disappear and be replaced by something else, that you transfer the files over to the new storage format. The good news is the storage is getting cheaper and denser. So in the future, at some point, we might have little, they look like paperweights, little cubes that'll hold every bit of data you've ever created in your whole life. And, you know, you could use it on your desk as a paperweight until you need it. As long as you can, but the burden is on you now to continue to keep an eye on it. I do both. So I use Google Photos, Apple's Photos, and Amazon's Photos, and I store photos in all three places. One of those will still be in business in 20 years. I don't know which one.
Right.
But yeah, and you keep
some of your pictures.
Let's hope. And then I also keep a local hard drive. And what I do is something called a network attached storage, which is a device, a little expensive for most people. The idea is it's a cloud in your closet. It's a device. In fact, this is the best solution if you don't want to worry about the cloud, is to make your own cloud. It's not on the public internet. It's stored in your on your premises. These network-attached storage devices are really computers with lots of storage, usually multiple drives. And you don't have a keyboard, mouse, or monitor. You access them over your network. So you log into your regular computer, and they're shared on that computer as the contents of your network-attached storage. They have almost all the companies that make these have features that support exactly what you want to do. I use one from a company called Synology. I actually recommend it. I really like them. Synology. But not cheap. Uh-huh. You're buying an enclosure, and then you have to populate it with drives. Mine has a basically unlimited amount of storage. I have a 5-drive unit. So as drives become more dense, I can swap them out. It has redundancy. Up to 2 drives can die, just literally stop working, and I still won't lose any photos. All my photos are also backed up to that. And then they have they have apps for photos, the photo album app that you could share with friends. You could do all the things that you do with a cloud storage, but you own the cloud. So
it's not public.
It's not public, unless you make it so. So
it's pricey.
Well, it depends. You can get a 2-drive Synology for a few hundred dollars and then stick 2 drives in there. So that's under $500 at that point. The one I have, the 5-drive unit, I ended up putting 3 3-terabyte and 2 2-terabyte drives in there because I wanted a lot of storage. And the enclosure was $700, and you add the drives, now you're probably talking more like $1,500 total. So, but there's a range. At the very least, get an external USB drive, plug it in, and copy it there. You'll at least have a copy there. Remember, though,
an external hard drive, right?
Yeah, and just copy it there. But it's a good idea to – here's what I would do. Get 2. Bring one to work every week. Make sure they're in sync. That way, if something bad happens, your house burns down, at least you've got a 1 off-site copy. Yeah, the cloud, I understand, it's for privacy that you don't want to put your photos out in the public.
Right.
But and yet at the same time, there are things that, for instance, Google Photos does. You're trading. I understand you're trading a little bit of privacy for this, but it does face recognition. So I was visiting my son who's in college on Friday, and I was talking to his girlfriend, and I said, I'd like to show you baby pictures of my son, because I knew that would really embarrass him. And it was easy because I didn't have them with me, but on my phone I have Google Photos, and it has face recognition. So I said, pull up all the pictures of Henry. And it goes way back to the baby pictures. And I didn't do that. Okay. It did that. You can also do things like search for cities or locations, weather. You can ask it to show you all your pictures of dogs. And it knows the difference between a dog and a cat. For the most part, occasionally you'll get a cat in there. But it basically knows the difference. So that's a huge convenience that you don't get from a personal cloud. And the reason is you're leveraging everybody's photos because Google, the main reason Google gives you free photo storage is it wants to improve its photo recognition, its image recognition. So it's not publishing it to anybody else. I trust Google not to share it with anybody else. They do. I mean, there's an agenda. The agenda is they want to get better machine learning.
Right.
But as a result, you get this, I think, great benefit. So I completely understand.
Uh-huh.
But compare $1,200 to $0.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing, again, about doing it on a portable drive, that's fine. But then you also have not only the burden of keeping that data fresh, but of getting it off-site, too. I mean, cloud...
Yeah, well, I could put it in a fireproof safe.
You could. I would still bring one to work. You know, so the advantage of cloud is that you have somewhere off your premises, you have a copy of stuff.
Right, yeah.
Okay. And so, I mean, you're not going to have a fire. There's not going to be an earthquake or a tornado, but that's the idea. What would be, it happens all the time. We have big fires out here, and people lose their photo albums. They lose their cherished memories because with photos, you don't have backups.
Right.
So, you know, with prints. So this is kind of nice. This is a way to kind of preserve some of it anyway.
Yeah, okay.
You can get a fireproof safe is not a bad idea, unless it fails, then you'll be right. What you know about offsite is you know that that's safe.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All
okay.
Right.
Thanks,
well,
Lisa.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate the call. Take care. 8888 Ask Leo. I think that if I were to summarize our last call, and my point of the last call is, you don't have to use the cloud. You can absolutely duplicate what the cloud does yourself. Everything the cloud does, pretty much, well, with the exception of machine learning, you can do yourself. The problem is at a cost. So what do we get from cloud providers like Amazon and Google and Apple and Microsoft? We get very, very low cost. I should include our sponsor, Carbonite, too, right? Because they're doing the same thing. Very, very low cost storage offsite, where they do a lot of the things that you would, you know, have to do yourself, including buy the hardware. And with some of them, Google's my favorite example. Apple does this to some extent, too. But Google, they give you unlimited free photo storage for JPEGs, for compressed photos. In return, and this is pretty much true of a lot of stuff, like free cloud services like Google's, like Facebook's, in return for something. In the case of Google's photo storage, it's not advertising. To my knowledge, I don't believe they at any point look through your photos and try to decide what ads to show you. That's just an inefficient way to do it. It's much easier to do it in your email. So that's what they do, or your browsing habits. What they're getting out of the photos is machine learning. One of Google's big initiatives is to train artificial intelligence. They believe, and I think they're right, that there is going to be a massive future for smart machines. And there'll be lots of money to be made by smart machines. So one of the things Google does with your photo storage is image recognition. It benefits them because the more photos they have, the better they can get at this. And it benefits you because you can use Google's photo storage to search. You don't have to pre-categorize photos. You could say, show me all the pictures from June. Or you could say, show me all the pictures of Paris. Or you could say all the pictures of snow in Paris. Or all the pictures of my dog or my son. And you'll get those almost perfectly. Occasionally, a few strays will, you know, I occasionally get a cat in my dog photos. And occasionally, a dog photo will be missed because they can't tell it's a dog. But for the most part, that really works. And if you have a lot of photos, the worst part of having a lot of photos is keeping track of them, categorizing them, organizing them. Google does that for you for free. Free storage and free organization. What are you trading? I don't even know if I could say you're trading privacy. You're giving them data that helps them train their machines to get better at organizing. And image recognition and face recognition, all of which will be very valuable to Google. But I don't think it's a huge cost to you. Of course, you can make that decision yourself. I'm not telling you should do it. I just, in my opinion, that's the trade-off. It's very good to understand what those trade-offs are. And if you want to do it yourself, then it's important to understand, okay, here's how you duplicate cloud services. You have to buy this machinery. You have to buy this hardware. And by the way, you have to prepare for you know, fires and floods and earthquakes. There's a lot you have to think about that is offloaded by the cloud service providers. So I use the cloud. I'm not too afraid. I'm of the, you know, privacy. I guess if you're worried that maybe, and this could happen, I'm sure law enforcement could have, you know, get a warrant. We want to look at Leo's pictures. We particularly want to look at Leo's pictures from September 23rd of last year, 10 p.m. What was he doing? Well, Google's going to fight that, I guess, if they can, but they're in the long run, they're going to lose. That's another concern. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and on the line next, Kenny from Missouri. Hi, Kenny.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good.
What's up?
I had a couple of questions. I wanted to know when the new computers came out from, I guess, this year. And I was also interested. It's
like the new cars? Like, when is the new car? When is the new computer year? Yeah, I wish they were that organized. All right, what was your second question?
I wanted to know if you was interested in the new Nokia phones, not the 3310, but the other Nokia.
Smartphones, yeah. Good. I'm glad you asked that.
Android.
Yeah. So they're generally, the computer industry kind of releases new computers whenever. But you're right. There's a burst of new computers that come out in the spring and the fall. The fall for shopping, you know, the holiday shopping period. Spring for the school year, believe it or not. So they're coming out around now, March, April, and May, for purchase for kids going back to school in September. And they come out in September so they can be in the stores by December for the holiday buying season. So those are the two big bumps. But a lot of companies will come out all the time with computers. I don't think Dell, for instance, has a time of the year that announces the new 2017s are here. They make them as needed. But this is a good time. Right now is a very good time. There are a lot of new models coming out. We saw at CES in January, we saw new models of PCs from Lenovo that look really cool, the Lenovo Yogas. Dell has announced a new XPS 13 2-in-1. They're really advertising heavily for that. That's, in fact, Ars Technica's review from, I think it was Andrew Cunningham, just said it's the best Windows laptop made now. I think he's probably in the ballpark. So this is a good time. If you're looking at new models, this is probably a good time to look.
Okay.
Great question, though, about the new Nokia phones, because Nokia got all the attention for that candy bar phone, the 3310, which you won't even be able to get or use in the U.S. That's for the developing world. And that's something to understand, that Nokia is back in the phone business, but they're not in the high-end phone business. Nokia sees its business and its brand as succeeding where less expensive phones are more popular. So they announced a number of new smartphones. They're back in the market, in other words. When Microsoft bought Nokia and the Lumia business, they said, you can't make phones until 2017. That seemed like a long time ago. But now they're back. Mostly, though, they're inexpensive. They're in the $300, $400 range. The Nokia 3 is, you know, they're a little bit lower CPU, you know, not using the latest Qualcomm 821 or 825 processors, but more like the 400, 410, the older processors. That's fine, because I don't think really your smartphone needs to be a supercomputer in your pocket. People often buy smartphones by specs. They have two sizes on the newest ones. There's a 5-inch and I think a 5.5-inch. Cameras are decent. They're not as good as the old ones. Nokia was famous for its cameras. These phones aren't really being made by Nokia. They're being made by former Nokia employees who moved literally across the street in Espoo, Finland, and started a new company. But Nokia's labeling them. They're HMD is the company, HMD Global. But those are, I mean, as close as you can get to real Nokias. Those were made by the same people who made the Lumias. And they're being sold under the Nokia brand name. Nokia is actually a tire company now. They believe it or not, that's their big. They've always been known as very good tires, and when they sold off the phone division, they sold off the databases, they sold off the maps, they sold off pretty much all their digital assets. Tires was what was left. So But these are as close as you're going to get. They're made by former Nokia employees, and Nokia said, "Yeah, we put our brand on them." I think they're very good. I don't know what the status is of getting them in the U.S. Frankly, that's an interesting question. They're really aimed for the giant markets of China and India, the developing world. That's where they want to go. The Nokia 3, though. At 200 euros is a really well-priced phone. That comes with the latest version of Android, Nougat. It's got a pretty nice screen. It's going to be a good choice if you can get it. I'll have to look and see if it's not out. They're not out yet. This is, by the way, like the computers, spring is the time for new phones. In fact, I just got a new phone. I've been playing with it a little bit. I'll tell you a little bit about the HTC Ultra. I got that yesterday. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was just checking the prices of the new Nokia phones, and they really are, they quote in the press release euros, prices in euros, but we're talking for the top of the line, Nokia 6, about $250. And it's a Snapdragon 430, a decent processor. Because they're using older processors, you'll probably get better battery life. The newer processors are faster, but they also suck power considerably faster. I think these are going to be interesting phones. It's a shame, really, because the press got all excited about the candy bar phone. Oh, Nokia's bringing back the 3310, the beloved candy bar phone. It's $50, has 30-day battery life. It's a dumb phone, you know. It plays a game. It has Snake. But it's not going to work. I don't think it's going to work on frequencies in the U.S. So I was mentioning the HTC U. I'll hold off a little bit on my review of that, maybe later in the show. But it's a very pretty phone. This is the U Ultra HTC. Desperately trying to save, frankly, its business, its phone business. They make virtual reality headsets, the Vive, which are very good. They're probably the best out there. I don't know how big a business that is, but Nokia's phone business has really been lagging. They made some great phones like the HTC. Did I say Nokia? I meant HTC. The HTC One, which had stereo speakers on the front and solid aluminum body. It was really a quality phone. They did some weird things with the camera. It only had 5 megapixels, but they were ultra pixels. It was a moderate success, and then they succeeded it with lesser and lesser phones, and eventually, really, I think, lost most of the market share that they had. HTC has decided not to sell cheap phones going forward, but only to sell high-end feature phones. This HTC U Ultra 64-gigabyte phone is $750. It's iPhone-priced. And there's a couple of interesting things in it, but I'll give you the bottom line. It's not good enough to replace, in my opinion, the best Android phone out there, which is the Google phones, the Pixel and the Pixel XL. I'd probably still stick with those. If you're looking for a smartphone, at least for now, Samsung's S8 comes out in a month. That might change things. On the line from West Virginia, Blanton. Hi, Blanton. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Blanton,
hello.
What can I do for you, sir?
I want to know if you can help me or direct me to some source for removing launchpage.org browser virus redirect.
Yeah. So the good news about these are called browser hijacker objects. And the good news about those is that they're fairly easy to remove. The bad news about it, if you've got one, is you may have other stuff on there. It depends how you got it. So, did you install this or how did you get it?
I don't know.
Ah.
It just showed up about
just,
a week ago.
Just showed up. And what does it do?
All right, I use the Firefox browser, yeah. And when I boot up my computer and click on the icon for Firefox, it goes up there and says home page, and then a whole bunch of credit card size sites that I've been to.
Nice. In other words, but are they ads or are they just thumbnails of things you've visited?
They're just thumbnails.
Oh, all right. This is easy to fix. So I thought, and I actually have just looked up launchpage.org, and it looks like it's benign. Launchpage is actually a website you can go to. that will give you thumbnails. They probably make a little money. I don't see any ads on it. I would presume that the reason they exist, although with the .org extension, maybe they're a nonprofit, but the reason they exist normally would be to put some ads on your screen that you wouldn't get otherwise. Here's the good news. It looks like this has just merely modified your homepage. So you're using Firefox. So in order to change the homepage in Firefox, you have to go to the settings. Have you ever changed, you know, your browser's homepage in Firefox?
Oh, once a while back, long time ago.
So pick the page you want to start with. Right now it's launch page. Could be Google, could be My Yahoo. I don't know what you use as a homepage. But go there right now. And then there's a home button on your toolbar there in Firefox. Just a little, that's where you go when you go home. It's got a little house. If you just drag the page that you want it to be over onto the house, it'll then say, yeah, you want to make that your home page? You say, yes, that's it. That's all you need to do. You can also do it from preferences, and then that'll give you more choices. Like, for instance, just show a blank page if you don't want to see anything. Or it could load up your previous session or other things as well. So either go to preferences, general, and in the startup box, you'll see a few choices under preferences, general. Or you could just drag whatever page you want to be your homepage to your home button. This is good news. I was a little concerned because a very common form of malware is a browser hijacker object where they configure your browser. They change the search engine, usually to nothing you want, not one of the big ones like Google or Bing or Yahoo or even Dogpile. They change it to really a search engine that just is there to show you ads. They'll change your homepage so you see ads every time you launch the homepage. And the worst thing a browser hijacker object can do is start injecting pages into normal websites that you visit, start injecting ads into there. So that's, you don't want that either. So if you want Firefox, this is a good one from Dr. Wiggs. Thank you. If you want Firefox to start from scratch, you go to the help menu under troubleshooting, and there's a refresh Firefox button. Now, there is a launch page redirect I'm seeing, thanks to ScooterX. So there is a launch page. That's kind of odd. A launch page hijacker. I don't know why you would hijack to launchpage.org, because as far as I can tell, there's no ads. Okay. So they can use launchpage.org to also add random Windows shortcuts to your desktop and your start menu. So essentially, I don't think launchpage itself is a problem, but there are hijackers that will take advantage of launchpage and modify it. My strong suggestion is go change your homepage. If that doesn't get rid of it, then refresh Firefox by going to the help menu, troubleshoot, and refresh. That should get rid of everything. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, and home theater. And normally we do digital photography in this hour, but Chris Marquardt, a little under the weather. We're going to give him the day off. He's probably got that cold that's going around Europe these days. 8888 Ask Leo. That means there's more time for me to talk to you. 888-827-5536. We can also meet on the internet at the website, techguylabs.com. In fact, you'll find there a link to our chat room. I don't give them enough credit because it's kind of like I have a whole research department here, which really helps, let me tell you, because you guys come up with some wild questions. And they're very good about answering them. There's about 500 to 1,000 people in there almost all the time. I consider them my brains externalized. In fact, sometimes I, you know, as you get older, maybe even as you don't get older, you forget things. And the nice thing is the chat room seems to never forget. So if I've mentioned something, you know, 3 years ago, I'll just say, I don't remember. What was the name of that program? And somebody in the chat room will without fail say, oh, yeah, Leo, you were talking about that 3 years ago. The name of that. IRC.twit.tv if you'd like to join us in the chat room. It's family friendly. Lots of nice people in there. If you've never used chat before, it's a great way to kind of get started. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. And you're going to chat with Dave right now from West Michigan. Hi, Dave. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air. Welcome.
Ah, okay. I didn't know if I hear that right, and I was trying to get off my speakerphone.
No, it's okay. That's fine. It's kind of, you know, we keep you on hold for an hour, then we jump you.
Exactly. I've seen this so many times.
It's my special technique for putting people off their guard. What can I do for you?
Yes. Okay. I hope I wasn't messing up with Kim there and the call waiting, but I was trying to. What I'm doing is, I've had network attached storage that I've used. If you know Western Digital, my book drive.
Yep, we're just talking about NASs, network attached storage.
Yes, exactly. And I want to set one of those up. Basically, I'm beginning to reach my limits on one of my storage solutions, and I've got 4 of these things to spread all this data across. But
wow. So we can do better than that. So one of the disadvantages of the Western Digital solution is, I think in your case, it's a single drive solution, right?
Well, there's dual drives, but if you set them up normally, they are, you'd set them up so that they mirror, they do.
Ah. So there is some redundancy. They have 2 drives in there.
Yep.
But one mirrors the other, so you have half the total capacity available to you. But that way, if one of the drives fails, it's like RAID. It is RAID, in fact.
Essentially.
Yeah. I would recommend, though, the problem with that is you've run out of room already.
Exactly.
And also, 2 drives isn't as good as 5.
Mm-hmm.
So now this is where it gets expensive, because now you're going to buy a bigger enclosure. Yeah. And Western Digital makes the drives, but most of the other companies that sell network attached storage don't. They just sell you an enclosure, and you populate them with the drives of your choice. You can buy the drives from them, but usually people just buy their own. The good news is, if you can open up your Western Digitals, you can take the existing drives and put them in the new enclosure. They won't save the data. Don't.
Yes.
I'm just saving you.
One of my questions.
Yeah, it won't save the data. The data is, so you're going to have to copy the data off.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could,
actually have it mirrored right now. So one of the things is if I have it on the one mirror, I just want to copy it off, and then I'd still have the mirror. I'd still have my backup, and I wouldn't worry about minimizing how many storage locations I have before.
Right. You got to be careful with RAID, because first of all, it's often implemented in different ways. Usually a RAID array that's made by one manufacturer won't be readable by another manufacturer. You can't mm-hmm. split the drives up. You'd assume they're mirrored. They could split up. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Usually you can. Usually those are identical drives, so you could take one out and read it normally, but maybe not. So I would not make any assumptions. I would just treat those as sealed units and copy the data off.
All right.
And make sure you have a good copy. But then you can take those drives out, and they're probably Western Digital Red, which they make drives for network-attached storage that are a little slower, a little lower heat. They're designed to run continuously. But it doesn't really matter, because Synology is the one I'm going to recommend. I love it. There's others. There's QNAP. There's Netgear. There's a ton of them, but I use Synology, and they're not a sponsor. I've never received a penny from them. I buy everything I use from them, but I hardly recommend them. Not merely because...
And that's what I was planning on moving to, thinking of a Synology NAS. I was going to start with one of their 1515 Plus.
That's what I use, and that's a 5-drive array, so you can take those copy the data off, underscoring this. You can't read that data from anything but that Western Digital device. Copy the data off, pull the drives out, pop them into the Synology. It'll build a new RAID. I have so much storage on mine. I put 3 terabytes and 2 terabytes. So that's 13 terabytes of storage that I used. They give you a choice to say you could have 1 redundant drive or 2. So 2 out of the 5 drives are redundant. That cuts down by 40% the total storage. But I had so much, I didn't mind that. I still have 9 terabytes. And any 2 drives at any time, any of the 5, any 2 can fail. And I won't lose a bit. And that's really important. It also uses a file system that preserves integrity called BTRFS. So it's making sure that when it writes a sector, it's properly written. You have fewer error propagations. And then you get the software that they provide, which is called DSM. It's a Linux operating system, although you don't really see the Linux, but you can do a very broad range of cloud-like things, including your own office suite. I have replaced Evernote with what they call DS Note, which is the Synology Note application. Okay. Does everything Evernote did, but it's a local cloud. I'm no longer
into that. Sure.
Now, you don't save money doing this, but you have great peace of mind and amazing functionality. And if you really want to get geeky, you can, because DSM allows you to install Docker containers, which means you can run pretty much any software you want. It's an Atom processor, quad core Atom processor. It's not super fast. It only has, I think it comes with 2 gigs of RAM. You can add an additional 4. So it's not a supercomputer, but it's sufficient to do a lot of the things.
My main issue was getting throughput. If I wanted to stream a video off of the source,
that's fine for that.
I wanted to make sure that
it has 4 1 gigabit Ethernet ports, 4 of them. So you can even pair them up. You can bond them.
All right. Now, let me go beyond that. You mentioned about the BTRFS and the disk station manager. Did you do a management of how? Because I was looking at the Synology hybrid RAID as far as setting it up and how I would do that. Maybe it does it mostly itself, or it helps you through it. I didn't know.
Gosh, I don't remember, but I think I just said yeah. Okay. Right. Yes.
And you let it manage all that.
I let it do everything. The only choice I remember making is using 2 drives. You can use 1 or 2 drives for redundancy. It does the BTRFS automatically.
Okay.
I would recommend, for security reasons, using no more services than you absolutely need. You don't want to just turn on services because you can do it. So it has you can run WordPress on it if you want, but don't turn that on unless you're going to use it, because everything you turn on adds potential security problems. Encryption is on by default. One of the things you can do, and I do recommend, is you can actually make it a TLS server if you're going to use it off the public internet. You don't have to, but one of the advantages is I can log into my cloud from here, and it uses TLS, and you can either use their quite clever redirection system or get a certificate of your own, and they support Let's Encrypt, and I find that works quite well. You have to get a domain name to do that. The Synologies are really remarkable. I wish I could get them to buy some ads. They're getting them anyway. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So we had to break for an ad, but you're still here.
Wonderful.
So what else would you like to know? I mean, I really think I've never met anybody who had anything negative to say about Synology. It's really quite impressive. And
that's one of the things. You are, to be honest, you're a mentor of mine. I typically don't need technological mentorship, but at least as far as it goes, you touch everything and you've got so many friends in it, it just helps.
Yeah, that's so, kind of the idea. We're a community here, right? And so
exactly.
If you can, anytime, you can be in a community of like-minded, technologists, that helps, because you can say, well, what about this? And so this is, I agree. I think that that's certainly I don't take credit for it, but it's nice. We have a bunch of geeks. And, Father Robert has been telling me Synology for years, and I ignored him. And then I got the Synology, and I mentioned
it. Listen to the Father.
I know. And I mentioned it on MacBreak Weekly, and Andy Inako and Renee Ritchie both said, what, you haven't been using that all along? It's like, oh, you are? Yeah. Oh, yeah. We use it. We love them. So it's like, it's you're joining a cult now, the Synology cult. but they're pretty, they're pretty amazing. I use a Drobo Mini as a 4-drive SSD, very fast external hard drive on my iMac, and that works great. The Drobos are not as powerful processors, and so you while they do have plugins, that just the range and variety and functionality of them just don't match what Synology offers. So I use the Drobos as massive RAID. They use something called Beyond RAID, but massive RAID storage, but not as a NAS.
Okay.
Yeah.
That pretty much goes beyond, I think, most of the things that I had. My first two primary questions had to do with that, because I already had the Synology selected. I was kind of figuring out how I was going to set it up with the RAID, but if it does it itself, then that should be handled.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to think about that. Yeah.
I was already going to, I still want to figure out how I do this safely. I have all of my data is mirrored on, I have like 2 separate drives for all of my data right now, because I've several terabytes. I don't have any of it in the cloud.
See, this is why you get the big one. Yeah, this is why you get the big enclosure, so you don't have to have multiple small enclosures.
I got huge storage, but it's spread out because I can't keep it all in one storage. Now I'm going to go to one.
Yeah. And down the road, you can get a second Synology, bring that to work, and you can set them so they will synchronize.
Yes. And that's definitely in the future, wanting to be able to do that networks synchronization.
That works quite nicely.
That will give me my third of the three storage to have another location where I can store several terabytes of data.
And at this point, I don't worry about my data. I've got it all. You know, there's just nothing that could go wrong.
I have lost gigabytes. Yeah. Oh, Father Leo, I have lost gigabytes.
Who hasn't? Those are the people who have good backup solutions. People who lost.
I had one other check, and maybe you can keep this in the notes or have this put in the notes. I was wondering, I'm getting, because I'm near capacity on one of my drives, it's getting network access errors, and I'm wondering if that's because it's getting hard to read, because getting near the end of the drive, now it's finding difficult to write to locations, and I was wondering, maybe I need to check that disk, and I need your friend's
You don't have to worry about that. The Synology will do a disk check for you. In fact, it does it periodically.
Oh, and it will, because you get that on a Western Digital. Their software checks it, but it says it's healthy, and I'm going, healthy.
When you put them in the Synology, in order to build the RAID, they're going to do a thorough check, and then they periodically, monthly, they'll check disk health.
Oh, keep that out. That would be a wonderful thing to not have to think about that and to think it's actually doing the check.
I got to run. Nice to talk to you.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you very much, sir. Thanks for your help. Bye.
My pleasure. Thanks for listening. Let's go to St. Cloud, Minnesota. Mike is on the line. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Obviously, I disagree with the person before who said that she doesn't like the cloud coming from St. Cloud.
All cloud service providers should be in St. Cloud.
Oh, yes. It would be awesome if that happened. Among other things, we'd probably get better internet out here.
You sure would. What can I do for you?
Okay, so I've got a Nexus 6, or it might be a 6P, Google Nexus 6 on Verizon.
You'll know the difference. The 6 is giant 6-inch screen. The 6P, which came out the following year, is only a 5.5-inch screen, or 5.7.
Yeah. To be honest, I'd have to get out the ruler.
That's okay. That's okay.
But anyway, it has not gotten the NuGet update. And I checked, as you suggested, one time to go and look and see when the last update for security was. November.
Oh, that's not good.
And I've tried putting the thing on the Google beta program to pull NuGet. I'm not sure what to do at this point, because I'd prefer not to root the thing.
I think you have a Nexus 6.
Okay.
Which is the Shamu. They call it the Shamu because it was massive. And
like my phone.
And I think you're not getting updates anymore. 6P has been updated to NuGet, and if you didn't have NuGet on your 6P, then there's something going on. Who's your carrier?
Verizon.
Oh. No.
Yeah, I know.
No. Let me just see if Verizon has any plans. Because this is the problem with updates. And, you know, Apple has set the bar, had set the standard, and it's because they had so much negotiating power in 2007 when the iPhone came out.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to say, you know, no, you don't get in the way. We will push updates when and however we want. And that was the deal they made with AT&T, and they've managed, because it became such a success when they expanded to Verizon and T-Mobile and Sprint, to enforce the same standard, which is what you want. You know. But they also have an advantage because they're the only ones who make iOS phones. Android has several layers, because Google makes the operating system and they make the updates. But then manufacturers like Samsung and HTC and LG and many, many more, there are literally thousands of Android phone manufacturers, they then have to take the update, test it with whatever they've done to the phone, make sure it works, then they pass it along to your carrier. And unlike, you know, Apple, Google didn't have any clout in the market, so the carrier decides, I don't think we'll pass this one along. So there's no guarantee of getting updates. The good news is Samsung, LG, and I think Motorola have all promised, pledged to apply the monthly security update that Google pushes out. They'll be a little slower because, again, they have to test it. But that does that mean that they're automatically going to get through the carrier? I don't know. There's a debate over who pays. You know, if you think about it, all those downloads cost money. That's bandwidth you're using. Bandwidth you don't pay for. The carrier pays for. So the rule generally, as I understand it, now, correct me if I'm wrong, if anybody's listening and works for a carrier, is if it's a big update, like from Marshmallow to Nougat, the carrier pays for it. But if it's a smaller update, then the manufacturer pays for it. It's complicated. In other words, it's complicated. And that may be why you're not getting an update. I'm trying to see Google Nexus 6 software update. Yeah. So, are they updating to Nougat? It's my sense, as I remember, Google did not offer 7.0 for the Nexus 6. I think that they discontinued it for that. As for the security update, according to, and thank you guys smiling in the chat room, thank you for posting this link in the chat room. According to 9to5 Google, the March security update for the Nexus 6 was pulled because it broke Android Pay for many people. But you haven't gotten anything since October. Have you? You've gone to the settings?
I think.
Yeah, you've gone to the settings and checked for an update?
Oh, yeah. I do that very religiously. So,
well, you may, if you really want to keep... I have a Nexus 6 at home. I'll have to check. I can't remember if they were going to update that to 7 or not. The good news is Google's Android phones are very easy to update yourself. Google doesn't care if you root it. Google says that's why we made Android. You should have, it's your phone, you should have the right to root it. So apparently, okay, so Pacific Northwest in the chat room says they do plan to over-the-air update to 7.0 on the Nexus 6. So I'm not sure why you haven't gotten it. One thing you might want to do, if you're really desperate to get it, and you should be, because not having those security updates worries me, is do a factory reset, right?
Ah, okay.
I would try that. And then before you add all your apps, and by the way, that, you know, Google makes this very easy. It'll remember all the apps you had installed. It'll remember all your settings. Just make sure you check that backup check in the settings. And so it's very easy to get back to square one. If you have a launcher, custom launcher, save the setup for your custom launcher as well. You can save that to Google Drive. That's what I always do. That makes it easy to set up a new phone. But a factory reset might be indicated here. You really want it to be upgraded. Oh, Wikipedia says you can get the Nexus 6 to 7.1.1. That's the latest Android. And if you can, you want to, because it's really much more secure.
Okay.
It's not about functionality so much, but it really is about security.
Agreed. By the way, if I could do a quick second question. Hopefully
sure.
This will be quick.
Yeah.
Okay. So I got one of the Apple routers, the iPorts. Because you mentioned, well, Apple always updates it. And I kind of like the hands-off, you know, not needing
right.
to go check my router every time.
Yep.
But as I understand, they're going to not
Well, they haven't announced this, but they haven't shipped a new one in a few years.
Right.
And I think it was Recode noticed that all the people who were working for the airport division got reassigned. Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me like Apple, and it would make sense, because if they're not really willing to commit lots of resources, they probably should stop selling it. And there's a lot of, you know, competition now in the mesh router space. And while that would be a good place for Apple to be, I think they really kind of try to limit the products they offer. So my guess is it's time to replace that router.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is how much time do I have?
Well, it's not that they're not.
Announcement. I got an update.
I don't think they'll allow it to become insecure, but I don't think there'll be a new one. And this is something I'm kind of more recently been saying. People should update their routers every few years, not for security reasons, but they literally wear out. And so you'll start noticing a router becoming less reliable and so forth. It's probably a good idea, not merely to, you know, get the latest security patches and the latest functionality, but just because these things start to wear out. I say, you know, how long have you had those AirPorts? You know, a few years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, keep using them. They're not insecure, absolutely not insecure. But at some point, if you start noticing reliability issues, then it might be time. And who knows, maybe Apple hasn't discontinued it. They've not announced it, but they've also not released any new ones in years. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. You geeks. You geeks. We got something just for you. Geeks buy houses. Geeks refinance. But geeks, are one thing geeks don't like to do, they don't like to go into a bank and go through paperwork and bring boxes of paperwork in to apply for a home loan. They would like to do everything online. We would like to do everything online, right? Do you shop online, right? I buy clothes and shoes online. I do everything online. Kitty litter. We buy it online, right? You know, it's easier. It's better that way. So Rocket Mortgage is created by a company that you certainly know, Quicken Loans. They're one of the biggest and absolutely the best mortgage lender in the business. Go to quickenloans.com/techguy. You could check out all those J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards year after year since 2010. Every single year, number one in customer satisfaction. They're really great. And they understand that there are some of us, you know, some people really do want to, I want to meet my mortgage loan officer. I really like bringing in the check stubs and the pay statements. And some of us just want to get her done. You can apply for a loan entirely online, even submit the paperwork you need, like checking account statements and pay stubs and all that, all electronically, touch of a button. And because everything's electronic, you can control the rate, you control the term, and you can get approved literally in minutes, not months, not weeks, not even days, minutes, for a loan that's just what you're looking for. That's Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, go completely online at quickenloans.com/techguy. quickenloans.com/techguy, equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. I know maybe this is, if you're listening on a Sunday, it's a beautiful spring day here in California. I think it's snowing in New York, but you might be going to some open houses. It'd be a great time to do that. Bring your phone and bring this address, quickenloans.com/techguy. We thank him so much for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. Normally at this time, we'd be talking to Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, a little under the weather, so we'll postpone to next week. I do want to remind you, we're doing an assignment, and we're asking you to take a picture that illustrates the word or concept break. I'm not even going to tell you how you spell it, just break. You can decide, because really the point is just to get you out there taking photos. And I think in the next week or so, it's probably time for a review. So Chris will look at all the photos submitted to our Flickr group. It's the Tech Guy group on Flickr.com. Free to join. If you want to upload a picture, you can do, you know, just tag it with the word break. And Renee Silverman, our moderator, will collect them all. And Chris will go through them and pick three he wants to talk about on the radio. In the next couple of, maybe next week, maybe the week after. Break. What does that mean? 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We go on to Patrick in Louisiana. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I am great. How are you?
Great. Listen, come across a situation over here, and I don't know what's going on with Verizon, but I've been with them for years, and always buy new phones with them. Right now, I'm talking to you on a Moto Z Force.
Oh, how do you like that? You like that?
Good, pretty good phone. It's real rugged. The reason why I have it because in my line of work, I'm dropping a phone off ladders. I had it on the tire of one of my trucks, and I ran over it with an F-250. And I'm telling you, it didn't hurt the screen. It did not hurt the screen. And anyway, make a long story short, their cloud quit working as of January the 16th. So I called them. I thought it was a phone issue. It's not a phone issue. Can't even retrieve it from the computer. Hmm. Can't even get through on their server from my laptop. So I called them, phoned it, put tickets in, nothing happened.
So you use Verizon not only on your phone, but you use their data for your computer.
That's true.
Do you do it by hotspotting with the phone, or do you have a separate connection?
No. I've got a fiber coming through a cable modem to my house.
Oh, even that?
Right, through the network. And then,
so wait a minute. So you're not getting cell data or Fios data?
Right.
And what do they say?
They, we're working on it. We got an outage. I said, really? They put a ticket in. I called them. So it'll be fixed by blah, blah, this date. Okay, well, it's not fixed by January the 20th.
Where in Louisiana are you?
Lafayette, Louisiana.
The beautiful Lafayette.
Yeah.
So that's not a small town. That's a big town. Yeah.
What's that?
It's not like you're out in the bayou there. I mean, that's a big town.
No, they said it's a nationwide outage.
Nationwide?
That's what they said. And I said, well, check this out. My friend's cloud's working on his side.
Nationwide, if the nation is Lafayette South.
I know.
Nationwide? I think that would be in the news if Verizon had a nationwide outage.
I don't know. That's why I'm calling you, because I think they're hiding something.
How long has it been out? How long has it been out?
January the 16th.
Holy cow.
They can go to Verizon. I can get copies of every ticket. I put about 5 tickets in. They said, no more tickets. We know the situation.
Stop bugging us. We know it's...
We have a large
okay.
So what are they doing?
They're not fixing it.
Are they ordering the ports from China?
No, they're not fixing it. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, they're not fixing it. So the cloud data is not... You didn't lose anything. I said, yes, but I need it. I have pictures of documents, IP addresses, pictures of passwords for servers and everything for my line of work. I said, I need this for my jobs.
Holy cow. I don't know what the answer is, but is Verizon the primary there? I mean, it's not a reseller that's selling you Verizon connectivity. It's Verizon, the big...
Verizon is
big boy Verizon, huh?
That's right.
Well, I think it's time now to go to the Louisiana state regulators and to go to the FCC and complain. Write them a letter. I can't understand it. And it's amazing that, hey, no more tickets, please. Yeah. Do your neighbors have this problem? Can you tell if it's in your area?
Well, this is the deal. I went to one of the Verizon stores. This is a corporate store.
Yeah.
I said, the associates pulled up their cloud and it's working. So we'll check it out. It's working on yours and on mine. So they called me, we got to call the tech support. Well, it just so happens my number's in this batch of numbers in this particular server that's out.
Ah. And that's so do you have internet access otherwise? It's just their cloud you can't access?
It's just the cloud. My phone works fine. And check it out. It backs up contacts to the cloud, but I can't retrieve. What's wrong with that?
So you're in some pool of numbers that for some reason...
Yes.
Well, it doesn't seem right that it's been broken since January. I could understand maybe a few days.
Right.
That's shocking. I don't have an answer for you, except now you could say, well, look, I called the national radio. Now everybody knows about it.
I even went on Twitter, and I got a hold of corporate, and I laid it to them.
Good.
I told them like it was, and they came back to me, apologized. They gave me credit. So I said, that does not...
But they didn't fix it.
The information.
They didn't fix it.
Right, right.
Well, I guess we know now that if you're going to use the cloud, use more than one service.
Oh, no doubt. I've got a memory card in this phone. It goes straight to the cord. Forget the cloud.
Yeah.
You know, I went ahead and I put a memory card in the phone. So it's...
Who was it before Verizon? Because Verizon... It was Bell South?
Yeah, no. AT&T is horrible over here.
That's Bell South, yeah.
It used to be a company called Cellular One.
Cellular One, all right. Yeah, they bought Cellular One.
Cellular One, and then Verizon bought out about every tower Cellular One had. Now, Cellular One was pretty reliable.
Well,
AT&T over here is the biggest joke in the world.
From now on, get what you can. When they get it fixed, make sure you copy everything over to Google Drive. And don't depend on just one. I guess that I've never had a problem like this. Certainly not. I mean, there have been outages for a few hours, but I've never heard of a couple of months. That's terrible. And I, of course, can't help you except to say, Verizon, fix it. Lafayette, Louisiana, good people down there. I've been there. I love Louisiana, and Lafayette's a great city. But somebody in the chat room says, "Yeah, I live in Louisiana too. Verizon's terrible down here." Well, there you go. It what can you do? The problem with these companies. Remember the old Remember Laugh-In and Lily Tomlin? And she did that old, she'd be the operator. And you'd complain, and she'd say, we don't care. We don't have to. We're the phone company. These companies aren't monopolies anymore, but they come from monopolies, and they were monopolies, and they just haven't changed their mindset. They don't understand it's competitive now. Maybe they're starting to realize. But it's not just Verizon. It's Verizon and Sprint and T-Mobile and AT&T and a bunch of other little guys, and you're not a monopoly, so stop acting like one. We don't care. We don't have to. That is a reference that nobody under 60 is probably going to get. But kids, just Lily Tomlin laughing. Look it up. Look it up. You write to the FCC. You write to the State Utilities Commission. You probably get no response. But now I'm told by Louisiana that T-Mobile is a good carrier in Louisiana. See, this is why competition is good. T-Mobile, historically, number four, right? So they tried harder. And they've grown faster than Verizon or AT&T. Now, of course, as soon as they're big and fat, they're going to get bad again. But competition is what you need. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, listening to old Lily Tomlin bits. You can find, you know, God bless YouTube, right? Because nowadays, when an old guy like me says, well, it was Laugh-In in 73. And Lily Tomlin did her bit as the operator from the phone company. Instead of a blank look, you could say, well, it's on YouTube. And the kids will go, oh, well, it's on YouTube. I'll go check it out. Yesterday I was visiting my son in college. He's 22 years old. I mentioned Johnny Carson. He said, who's that? I know. That was a gasp arose. You don't know. But the thing is, he does know YouTube. And he can find anything on YouTube. He loves cooking. He's become a chef. I said, well, how'd you learn all these great recipes? He's a YouTube. It's all he watches. In fact, this is the real reason why you saw Snapchat stock go through the roof and all that money. Billions, the company's worth $34 billion. Why? Because every advertiser in the country knows that kids 18 to 25 don't watch TV. They're not seeing the ads. How, if we don't get that 18-year-old hooked on Coca-Cola and Tide detergent, he won't know what to buy when he's 25. We got to get them while they're young. That's when those brand habits are branded into your brain. And so they're desperate trying to find places. But I have to say, I look at my kids and anybody under 25, they don't watch TV. They watch YouTube, but thank goodness for YouTube, because you can, if you want, I doubt he's done this, but you could look up some history too and see some classic television. I bet you there's even Johnny Carson stuff on YouTube. And by the way, I think in many cases it's a violation of copyright, right? And NBC, who owns all those Tonight shows, could probably get it pulled down. But I think that I hope they're enlightened enough to say, you know what, we're not. Yeah, we own the copyright, but you know what's. What's the harm? And this way, you introduce a whole new generation to your company, your products, your history. I would hope that they'd have that enlightened attitude. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. And Steve is on the line. By the way, lots of 18 to 25-year-olds listen to this radio station, I just want to say. Steve's on the line from Redlands. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm awesome. Can't complain.
Good.
Hey, I have a Dell Inspiron 15. It's the laptop that flips into a tablet.
Yeah.
And the Wi-Fi signal, for whatever reason, just drops off in the middle of anything. And all my other laptops hook up, no problem. I've called Dell, and they've actually let us have access. And they logged on. Oh, there, we fixed it. Still does it.
There, we fixed it.
Yep.
Did they ever tell you how they fixed it?
No, they went through and they said, they were going to do some updates is all they said.
Yeah, they don't know. They don't know what's wrong. Usually when you get first-tier support, sometimes second and third-tier support too, it's really somebody with very minimal training. Certainly not a geek, you know, the kind of people that listen to this show or in our chat room, people like me. It's somebody who's got a job. It's a good job. And they have a notebook. And they might give you a couple hours training. And then they say, okay, when somebody calls, here's the notebook, and you look up the problem in the notebook, and then you go down the steps. And then you say, thank you for calling, it's fixed.
And well, they also said, here's our number. If you continue to have a problem, call us back. Who let us help you.
Yeah, like we helped you the first time.
Yeah. And then when they will say, oh, we'll call you between these hours. Well, there are hours I can't.
Oh, I know. I know. And the truth is, if you can't get it escalated, there are some people there who will help you. And
okay.
I am never going to knock customer service reps because that's a terrible job.
Oh, it is.
It's very hard. You're a nice person, but you know most of their calls are people screaming at them.
Yeah.
And they're doing the best they can. It's hard. Look, I do this this is for a living.
Yeah.
And if somebody's on the phone, it's very hard to diagnose it. Now, they did the thing that is helpful that I wish I could do sometimes, which is reach out and look at your computer. But why does Wi-Fi drop out? It drops out for a lot of reasons, many of which have nothing to do with updates or the software on your computer. Now, I know you say you don't have that problem with the other computers, but remember, that computer has a unique radio, unique software. The other computers may be on different frequencies. It could really be your own, you know, your own Wi-Fi that's the problem. Wi-Fi is very difficult and problematic, and it's gotten worse. Nothing we've done, but there's a couple of interesting things that I've only recently learned about Wi-Fi. One is that a Wi-Fi network is designed to coexist with other Wi-Fi networks. When you look at what you can see on your computer, you probably see more than just your network, right?
Right. All the neighbors and everything.
Yeah, you see a bunch of them. Anything you can see is considered in range.
Oh.
And if that network is communicating, your Wi-Fi goes, oh, let me step back.
Oh, okay.
Waits a random period of time. And then tries again. If somebody else is talking, oh, let me step back. So a lot of Wi-Fi is designed to drop out. And the reason is most, if you're surfing a web page, you don't notice. If you're getting email, you don't notice. Where you notice is if you're playing a video game with people right. online or on a Skype call or listening to a stream. You know, if you're listening to this show on the internet, well, if the internet pauses every 30 seconds, the show is not going to be a continuous stream. It's not that your bandwidth is too slow. It's that the Wi-Fi is congested. And the ways around this are myriad. It could be... Now, that's a good laptop with, I'm sure, a very good radio. And they made sure you have the latest software. So I wouldn't necessarily blame the laptop. I'd look at your router.
Okay. Yeah, I just replaced the router about 8 months ago.
What are you using?
I have AT&T. It's the one... I have... Not AT&T.
It's provided by the internet service provider?
Right.
Yeah.
Frontier.
So those are always the worst. Oh, Frontier. Aren't you lucky?
Yeah.
So lucky. Just got that. Congratulations.
With them and got rid of most of their stuff.
Yeah.
I'm rid of the rest.
So generally, the ISPs provide you, and cable companies, as well as DSL companies, provide you with a kind of a basic modem router combo. They're not going to spend a lot of money on it. They are going to charge you $10 a month for the use of it.
Right.
That one has probably been used before. It may be several years old, so it could very well be. In general, what I tell people to do is you're going to have to use their DSL modem.
Right.
But turn off the router portion of it and get your own.
Okay.
And one of the reasons you're seeing this explosion of very expensive, I'm going to warn you here, very expensive mesh routers is because they are a good solution to these Wi-Fi issues. For instance, a smarter router will say, oh, your neighbor's on band 11 on the 2.4 gigahertz range. Your other neighbor, they'll try different bands. They'll try different channels, we call them, and they'll try different spectrum, you know, 2.4 or 5 gigahertz. They'll offer both. They'll do handoffs transparently so they can move you around even as you're sitting there to different frequencies to make sure that you get fewer conflicts. And the best thing is to start looking at 5 gigahertz.
Okay.
The reason is it doesn't work as well. I know this is counterintuitive, but the higher the frequency, these are all microwave frequencies. The higher the frequency, the more they bounce off things.
Yeah.
And at 5 gigahertz, of course, twice as high as 2.4, more than, it bounces off, you know, drywall. It bounces off a lot of things. But that's a good thing because Wi-Fi works best when it's contained in a small area.
Oh.
Then you get less of that interaction with other people's Wi-Fi. So if you're on the 5 gigahertz range, your neighbor's Wi-Fi isn't going to be visible on that spectrum because it's bouncing off his walls. If you're in the same room with it, it's going to be okay. And that's the reason these mesh routers have become popular. Instead of having one unit in the middle of the house beaming to the whole house, they have multiple units all over the house. You want a small little pools of Wi-Fi just in the area you want to be.
So you can use it there.
Exactly.
I tried the Netgear Nighthawk and tried to do that.
That's a great router.
Yeah, I loved it, except it started having conflict with the Verizon, or excuse me, the Frontier router.
Yeah, so you have to find out from Frontier how to disable their router.
And they wouldn't, I tried, they wouldn't help.
You then ask them, are there any third-party cable modems you recommend or allow me to buy? And you'll probably let you go out and buy an Aeris surfboard. And you get one of the DOCSIS 3 Aeris surfboards. There's a variety of them. They're all under $100. Take out the Frontier crap, junk, sorry. Take it out. Did I say that?
No, and I didn't hear anything.
Didn't hear a word. And replace it with your own modem. You're gonna now. You're gonna stop paying rent on it. So in the long run, in 10 months, you're breaking even, and you're making money after that. You're saving money, and you're gonna get a much better modem that doesn't do any routing. Then you have to get a router and attach it to that. And modern routers are designed for this very hostile Wi-Fi environment that we're all living in now.
Okay. Well, then that's what we will do.
So 5 gigahertz would probably solve this. I mean, it could be something. Look, I'm like the guy with a notebook. I'm doing the best I can from a distance. Could be something wrong with your laptop, but given that you went to Dell and they said it's fixed, now it's your router, I would guess.
Okay. Yeah, I even took it back to where I bought it, and their guys looked at it, and they couldn't help.
No, it's super common. Everybody has Wi-Fi problems now. This is universal. This is why these $300 mesh systems are selling like hotcakes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk tech. Yeah, that's computers, the internet, home theater. We talk about digital photography. We talk about smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality, self-driving cars, the future, the past, and the present. But the past, it only goes back to like 2008. So just a little bit of the past. And we don't go that far in the future because while it's fun to dream about flying cars and traveling to Mars and a smartphone that can guess your weight, height, and blood pressure, they're not here yet. And no one knows when they're going to get here. And so I prefer to kind of talk about stuff you can buy. That's what we do. This is not a sci-fi show. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area, you can still call. Just use a VoIP, some sort of VoIP-to-phone connection. Since it's a toll-free number in the U.S., it shouldn't cost you anything. Website, techguylabs.com, and I have put a link in our website. By the way, that's free. There's no sign-up. There's no toll road. It's wide open. Techguylabs.com, and I've just put a link in there to a really good article. If you're wondering why Wi-Fi has become such a problem, Jim Salter has written a fabulous article. He's a network engineer, and they published it in Ars Technica. It's called 802.11D. What? A deep dive into why Wi-Fi kind of sucks. It does. We all know it. But what happened? It was great, right? It was working so well. I think the best analogy he uses is it's like you're in a bar. And when we first went into the bar, it was just you and me, and we could talk like this in a normal voice. But then more people came in and more people came in, and it got kind of noisy. So we raised our voices, and they raised their voices. Pretty soon it got really noisy, and we still couldn't hear everybody because we were shouting as loud as we can, but it was so noisy. Well, Wi-Fi is kind of like that. When we first got our Wi-Fi, we were the only people in the area that had it. But as more people got it, what happened is marketers, the companies that made the Wi-Fi access points, turned up the volume. They said, well, here's how we solve it. And you might be one of those people that went out and bought these very sketchy Linksys was selling. A lot of them were selling with super Wi-Fi, super MIMO, super duper, that really were very powerful. They were so loud that they actually and took all the channels out of the they used every channel that your neighbor's Wi-Fi cratered. You didn't know. You didn't care because your Wi-Fi was great. Well, guess what? Many of your neighbors are using those now. Your Wi-Fi is cratered because everybody's shouting at the top of their voice. They're using as many bands as they can. So we've seen now in the last couple of years, Eero was the first to do it, E-E-R-O. And there, I should mention a sponsor, but there are many other companies, including Google. Linksys now makes some. They make these mesh solutions. And that, really, that's a bad description of why these work. It's not the mesh. I assumed, first of all, they're very expensive. typically $300, you get three access points. So you know, you spent $40 on your Linksys Wi-Fi router. Now you're spending $300. You'd expect it to be a lot better. And what I always assumed is, oh, well, there's just more of them, so it's shouting louder. You know, Wi-Fi always worked better when you were close to the access point, right? So put an access point everywhere. But it's more than that. It's much more sophisticated. Probably a lot of you have tried, as I have, before these mesh solutions came around, Wi-Fi extenders and power line networking and all sorts of ways to get Wi-Fi into distant rooms. There's a problem with Wi-Fi extenders and the wireless distribution system we've talked about. It cuts your bandwidth in half. And here's why. If you have satellites, you need to have a way to send and receive data from the satellite and the base station. They need to talk to each other in addition to you talking to the satellite, right? So the way they do that is by going into duplex mode. Half the time they're talking to you, half the time they're talking to the base station. That means your total bandwidth throughput is cut in half. So you can extend the network, but you cut your speed. There are a lot of other problems as well, because interference is still a problem and so forth. When they added new channels and new frequencies, they added particularly the 5 gigahertz frequency to Wi-Fi, and that started with 802.11n, I think, right? N was a big improvement because everybody who was on 2.4, you know, you couldn't use it. Everybody was on it, not to mention that your microwave oven, your baby monitor, and your cell phone were also using 2.4 gigahertz. So there was a lot of interference. But the other problem that maybe we didn't understand fully was that 2.4 gigahertz travels through walls better. We thought that was a good thing. Well, it is if you only have one router. You need to get through walls and ceilings and floors because that one router has to talk to everywhere in the house. Well, the mesh systems now, we don't have to get through walls as well. So these mesh systems, they talk to each other perhaps on 2.4 gigahertz, but they talk to you on generally what will happen, and they do this transparently. You don't even know what's happening, is they'll transfer your conversation to 5. And the reason is you want Wi-Fi that doesn't get through walls. You want Wi-Fi that's local to you. You don't want to hear the neighbors. And if the neighbors can be blasting your house at 2.4 gigahertz, but if they're using 5 gigahertz, the neighbors are also whispering. They're doing little local stuff, so they don't interfere with you. And so the idea is to get lots of little pools of Wi-Fi throughout your house, whispering. They don't interfere with your neighbors don't interfere with you. A great tool, highly recommended. Get it for your computer. If you have an Android phone, you can use it. There aren't any good ones on iOS because Apple doesn't let you access the Wi-Fi radios. But get a wireless or Wi-Fi analytic tool, a Wi-Fi analyzer. Very handy, because what it'll do is it'll show you graphically who's talking. And you'll see all your neighbors. You'll see what channels they're on. There are 11 Wi-Fi channels in each band. And there are at least 3 bands. There's 2 5 gigahertz bands, and there's a 2.4 gigahertz band. You'll see who's on each of them. You'll see how much traffic there is. And you'll see why you want 5 gigahertz, because it's much quieter. And now I don't have to shout to be heard. And so now it's a lot more complicated than that. That's kind of the kindergarten version of this. But if you read Jim's article, Jim Salter, I put a link in the show notes. It's on Ars Technica. You could Google also why Wi-Fi kind of stinks, kind of sucks. That'll take you right to the article. It's a good read, particularly the second part, because the second part addresses this issue of why we're having trouble with Wi-Fi. It's popular. That's why. And everybody's shouting, because for a long time, the way the wireless access point manufacturers solved this is by turning up the volume. They've gotten smarter. And these new mesh systems, yes, they're more expensive, but they're smarter. They move you around. They'll put you on different bands. They'll put you on different channels. They'll in real time, shift you around transparently to you. It looks like you've got one network. Really, you've got a bunch of different networks, and they're going to choose the one that's right for that particular moment. I really think these make a big difference. Now, ideally, you'd have Ethernet into every part of your house. You wouldn't have to rely on wireless, but that's rarely available as an option. Even if you have Ethernet and you still want to use Wi-Fi, because you don't want to sit plugged into the wall, if you have Ethernet in more than one room, you're lucky, because all of these mesh systems will allow you to plug your Ethernet into them. And that's even better because they don't need a wireless back channel now. They use the wired internet, the wired LAN, the network as the back channel, and it means they can whisper even more quietly. And it really makes a big difference. It's kind of impressive how we've solved this. So get yourself a Wi-Fi analyzer just as an educational tool, just to see. They're free. There's a lot of different ones. I use one called Wi-Fi Analyzer on the Android phone. It tells you a lot. It'll explain in a very simple graphical way why Wi-Fi is terrible and give you some ideas about how you can fix it. 8888 Ask Leo. We're going to take a break and we'll come back. Lots more of your calls still to come. Again, the website, if you want that link, is techguylabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. Hi, Kevin.
Good afternoon.
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. We don't get you on the radio here, but I do listen to your podcast. So
the internet is a marvel, isn't it? Yeah, we don't. To my knowledge, we only have U.S. We had a Canadian station for a while, but I think we only have U.S. stations for the Tech Guy Network. But the internet makes it possible to listen all over the world.
Yeah, it's a small world. Speaking of the world, I guess my question is this: my wife and I like to travel. We're lucky enough to be able to get away a month at a time or more.
Wow. And if you live in Calgary, maybe the winter is a good time to get away.
Well, you know, it's winter today. If you live in Calgary, you will understand the saying, if you don't like the weather, wait 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it changes.
You're on the plains, right?
Well, we're on the foothills of the Rocky Mountains.
Oh, okay.
So on the one side is the prairies and the other side is the mountains.
Got it.
So
that's why it's changeable, huh? Yeah.
That's why it's changeable. So like today, it's about zero in Fahrenheit. And I'm sitting here watching the Canadian March Madness on the prairies, which is the Briar, which is curling on TV.
Have fun.
It's a great game if you get into it.
You know what? It feels like it'd be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the number one sport in Canada, isn't it? People think it's hockey. No, it's curling.
Yeah, it's curling, and it probably is. It's just, you know, something you can do in the winter. It's a great winter sport.
All you need is a broom and a stone.
And some ice.
And of course, ice, yeah.
So anyway, as I was saying, we like to travel, and what I'm looking for is a small 10 or 11-inch laptop and that I can use while traveling. And I walked into one of our local computer stores, and I know you're a big fan of the Chromebooks, and they didn't really recommend them because really internet access can be a problem.
That's the problem, yeah. I love the Chromebooks, but I know for traveling, because a Chromebook is less, it's not that it's completely useless if you're not online, but it's less useful. And
right.
You need to get online sometimes. Right. Now, the good news when you're traveling, it depends where you're going. Almost every hotel I've been in outside the U.S., and actually inside the U.S. now, offers Wi-Fi. In many cases in Europe, they don't charge what they do here in the U.S. Sometimes it's free. A lot of times it's free. So,
and that works great when you're in a hotel, and that's always the plan to use the Wi-Fi when it's available.
Right.
But for example, last year we took a transatlantic cruise, and trust me, Wi-Fi.
Don't go on a boat. Yeah, no, I know all about that.
30 minutes to upload one picture.
Yeah.
30 minutes.
In fact, really, a computer in general is less useful on a boat. If you imagine your computer, any computer, not just a Chromebook, without an internet access, without a connection, you know, what are you going to do? Let me play with my spreadsheets some more. I mean, I don't. What we do with computers nowadays is number one is connecting to the net.
Correct. So on the assumption you don't have connection, you know, I was looking for something light. So you could compose your emails, kind of, you know, do a little bit of, you know, minor work on your pictures.
Yeah.
I don't want anything big. I don't want anything really expensive. I have good computers at home. I don't want to have to worry about it. I don't want to lug a lot of weight. And I guess what they were recommending here, and I don't know if you've had any thoughts, was an Asus. It was a Transformer Mini.
Yeah, the 2-in-1. Love it.
Okay.
Love it. It's a very tiny 10.1 inches.
Yep.
It's now it's a Windows machine.
Yeah, I know.
But if you want Windows, that's about as small as you. I mean, there are smaller, but it's about as small as you could actually use. You get much smaller than that, you sacrifice two things. First of all, the keyboard, you need to have little teeny weeny fingers,
yep.
And the battery life goes down oddly enough because there's no room for battery. So yeah, I think that Asus Transformer book is a fantastic choice.
Yeah, I just wonder if there's anything else. That's what I was kind of looking at.
There's lots else. There's a Lenovo Mini now.
Okay.
that just came out, the IdeaPad. In fact, Lenovo has a couple of 11-inch laptops. Acer makes an Inspire that's 10 inches. I'll be honest, my favorite Windows laptop isn't so small, but it's thin and light. And that's the HP Spectre. A lot of people last year chose the Spectre as their laptop of the year. It was very widely regarded, which is funny because for years, HP's laptops have been kind of the laughing stock. They used to junk them up with a lot of, you know, trial wear, and they just weren't great. But the Spectres are HP is back. And it's because HP separated out into two companies, a PC company and an enterprise company. And I think the PC company said, if we're going to survive, we better make better hardware. So right. The Spectre's S-P-E-C-T-R-E. They're super thin and light. They're just beautiful notebooks. They're powerful. So you're not sacrificing. And, you know, I think they're, I want to say it's a 13-inch screen. It might be a 12-inch screen. But it is 10 millimeters thick, which is like a clipboard. I mean, it is really thin. So that's a more high-priced choice. Otherwise, I think the Asus Transformer, excellent. And take a look at the Lenovo Mini and the other Minis.
Right.
I personally don't like a 10-inch screen, but I think as you travel, that's probably not a bad choice.
Again, you want to keep light, and this year we're going for a month. We're going to be river cruising.
Oh, it's so nice. I love river boats. Yeah, so here's this Asus Spectre is 2.5 pounds. That's pretty light.
Right.
You can get a little lighter. You can get under 2 pounds, like 1.9. But, I mean, it's hard to get much less than that unless you go to a tablet. So, you know.
And I use a tablet now, but it's kind of useless for a while.
Yeah, no, I like a keyboard.
Yeah.
The nice thing about these Spectres, they actually have very good keyboards. So do the Lenovos. The Asus, it's pretty good, too. I haven't used an Asus long term, so I can't tell you long term. But how about a tablet like the Surface where you have a detachable keyboard? Would that be of interest?
You mean the Microsoft Surface?
Yeah, those Surface Pros are very good. They're expensive too, but
yeah, my issue is cost. I mean, yeah. I have good laptops at home.
I see.
I really don't need another.
This is the one that you can lose if you if something went
wrong. Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. If you lose it or if something stupid happens, you crush it in your pack.
Yeah, right.
Like, you don't say, "Oh my God, there goes $1,500."
I think they gave you a good recommendation on the Transformer book. It does have that tablet capability, so if you want to go up on the deck and and just bring the tablet with you, play solitaire, you can do that. It is very light. It's only 10 inches. I mean, that's a tiny screen, but they do get pretty good battery life. They claim 12 hours battery life, which is kind of what you want.
Yeah.
But it's not a big, 64 gigs of storage. It's not a big hard drive. It's not a super fast processor.
Well, the one I was looking at had 250, whatever gigabytes.
Oh, okay.
Storage, so it's like a SSD drive, whatever.
Yeah, it should be SSD. Nowadays, I wouldn't get a laptop that didn't have an SSD. Those are more robust, and they're lighter, and they use less power, and they're a heck of a lot faster.
Yeah, like 256, I think.
Yeah, that's fine. They start at $330. I mean, this is, I think, a very good traveler notebook, because these Asus Transformer 2-in-1s, because they're inexpensive, they're very lightweight. You wouldn't die if you lost it or crushed it.
They don't have a ton of computing power.
No.
Like they're in...
I don't know if you need that. You're not going to be designing rocket ships.
You might want to play a bit with some window,
Solitaire would be fine.
Pictures and play with pictures.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah. You could do that. I think that, have a nice trip. I'm jealous. I'd love to... Riverboat cruising is so relaxing because there's nothing to do. So it's probably a good idea to bring a little something along with you. A good book, anyway. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Swamp Rat in the chat room says he doesn't go on cruises because he never learned to swim. Then he says he doesn't go on airplanes because he never learned to fly. So I can understand that. Yeah. 8888 ask Leo. Jose is in New Orleans. Hello, Jose.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I am great. How are you?
Oh, great, great, great. Long-time listener. Big fan of yours.
Thank you.
Been listening to you since the Ziff Davis days.
Oh, yeah, the good old ZDTV. You know, we were talking to somebody in Lafayette. We were on in Lafayette. I think it was one of the very first cities we were on, so we have a lot of the tech TV people A lot of them in Louisiana, so that's nice. And I love New Orleans. What a great city. What can I do for you?
I'm going to take you off topic here. I want to know about your desk.
My desk? Which desk?
I'm the one you're sitting at right now. I'm trying to get a custom-built computer desk, and I'm having a lot of problems.
This is not a computer desk. That's the irony of this. I think I got it at officefurniture.com. It is the biggest desk ever made. In fact, when I bought it, my assistant said, "You're never going to use that. What? That's too huge." It is a three-quarters desk, so it goes three-quarters of the way around me. There's a left side, a front, and a right side. And the reason I got it is because it's more than a office desk. For this is a studio desk, so I've got a audio mixer on it. I've got a TV switcher on it. I've got, I don't know how many computers on it. I got a giant TV set. This is more like the control station for a nuclear power plant than it is a desk. But yeah, I believe it was officefurniture.com. If you want,
you didn't get it custom made then.
Not at all. No. In fact, it was fairly inexpensive because it's not a, it's not mahogany or anything. It's and it's held up pretty well. We've had this for 12 years. And at one point, we drilled giant holes in it so we could put cameras on it. And there's still holes everywhere, and it's held up quite well. There's a lot of history in this desk. I hope someday this desk will be in the Smithsonian.
I doubt
it will. I'll tell you what, I will find, it's an executive desk. In fact, I just found it. U-shaped executive desks at officefurniture.com. I will put that link in the show notes. And
Amazon and Office Depot, Office Max, I can't find a desk that looks like that.
This was a good purchase, I think. And I'm sure we had to assemble it a little bit. I mean, I'm sure it didn't come completely made. And in order, that's a good thing because we've moved it three times. And in order to move it, you do have to disassemble it. You couldn't get this in a door.
Correct.
You can choose a right return or a left return. You can add a hutch. I think this would be a great computer desk. I don't like computer desks, you know, because they make assumptions about how you're going to use your computer, often assumptions that are a little dated based on modern computing.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, obviously a Rush fan, says, I have the equivalent, the desk equivalent of a Neil Peart drum kit. That's right. It's all around me. The one thing, this one concession to computers this does have, and it may have been an extra, and I do like to get these. It has a keyboard drawer. In fact, it has three keyboard drawers. So,
wow.
Yeah, if I did want to launch a nuclear submarine, or I could control it this way. This thing is like the Cadillac of desks. It's probably intended for lawyers, I would guess. You know, but it's perfect for what we do.
What I need it for is because I want to go to a three monitor setup.
Yeah, highly recommend that. And one thing that that a computer desk might give you that you really should consider, this desk probably does not have a deep enough front, you know, because if I put a monitor even on the very edge of it, it would be a little too close. You want your monitors to be at least at arm's length. You don't want them, especially if you have multiple monitors. So make sure you get enough depth from where you're sitting so that you can get the monitor, you know, about 2 feet away. But then you're going to have a fabulous experience. I am a huge fan of a multi-monitor setup. In fact, there's lots of research that shows the more real estate you have, more screen real estate you have, the more productive you are.
Yes, you are.
You can keep a browser window open, your word processor, so you can research it. I keep often a chat window, a Twitter window, messaging, all of that stuff open if you're playing games, too. Boy, that's fun.
Yeah, because I do desktop publishing.
So. It's perfect, exactly. So you need one monitor that is tall rather than wide in portrait mode there so you can see a page, but then you need monitors on the side. Yeah, I highly recommend it. So it wasn't cheap. It's about $3,000 I see at officefurniture.com. But given the quantity of wood, it's probably several hundred pounds of lumber. It doesn't seem like such a bad price. And they say shipping is free. Wow. Jose, great to talk to you. Thanks for listening all these years. Let's stay in Louisiana. What do you say? Let's go to Baton Rouge. John's on the line. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you, Leo?
I'm having a great time with my buddies from Louisiana.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Good.
What can I do for you?
Well, I just bought a small business here in Baton Rouge. And anyway, the man I bought it from, his son designed a computer program for the business. And anyway, I'm looking at it like a monkey looking at an algebra
problem. Yeah, this is, I don't blame you. It was lucky for the guy who owned the business prior to you that he had a son smart enough to write this software, and it's probably customized highly. The problem with custom software is usually it's not very well documented.
Well, it's not user-friendly at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's not user-friendly at all. So I said, if we're going to go into this thing, I said, let me get a new computer and get something, you know, that's, you know, secure, but it's still user-friendly, you know, because it seems like to me that some of the ones I looked at, they're user-friendly, but they didn't look like they were very safe.
Yeah. So this is a decision that every business these days makes, the build versus buy decision. Do you create your own software that's customized? Generally speaking, that's a very bad idea. You're right. I mean, is the guy who wrote this a good programmer? Is he smart enough to make it secure, good enough to make it user-friendly, and still affordable? Probably you don't get all three of those.
Right.
But when you buy software, then it's not customized. So what is the business?
What it is I took a job, and it's kind of an in-between kind of business or whatever, I guess, so to say. I guess more like a brokerage company.
Okay. So you need to keep track of what? Customers? Transactions?
I need to, on one side of it, I need to take care of my customers. And then on the other hand, on the other side, I have to take care of the folks I'm actually buying from to sell on the other side. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of double.
Well, but that's not at all unusual. Almost every business is doing something like that, right? Buying something, possibly modifying it, and selling it along. So you need to keep track of suppliers, customers. You're going to also, do you want to get accounting in there as well?
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, and all of it, you know, I learned years ago that, you know, just because somebody makes something doesn't mean you can buy it from them cheap.
Maybe
you have to go somewhere
else
and buy it cheaper than you can.
That is true. So the category, the first category is CRM, or Customer Relationship Management. It's like contact list on steroids. Keeps track of all your customers, all your contacts with the customers, what you've done for them. Then there's, of course, the supplier side is a little bit different, but it is a kind of relationship. It's a relationship with a supplier, not a customer. And both of those can be handled very well with software from a variety of companies. Probably the biggest in this business is Salesforce.com. And they have cloud solutions, which means you don't have to run it locally on your computer. They store the data. And the beauty of that is it's not only secure and backed up, but it's available on any machine at home, at work, anytime. And yes, if you get it from a company like Salesforce, it's going to be more secure. The accounting side, we use QuickBooks, and I have no hesitation recommending that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number for the last few calls of the day. Let's say hi to John in Los Angeles. Hello, John.
Hello, Leo. I'm calling because my desktop Windows 7 has lost the ability to connect to the Internet.
Well, I hate it when that happens.
Yeah. Well, it's worked fine for years, but it happened right after I downloaded and installed two programs from the Internet.
Uh-oh. What were they? Do you know?
A Safe Startup and Jailbreak VPN.
Well, I don't know what they are. They don't sound good. What were you trying to do?
I just wanted to see what they were.
Well, now you know.
Yeah.
Let me just look up... Okay, jailbreak's probably the one that's getting in the way. That's a virtual private network. And what it does is it takes your outbound internet traffic and routes it. You know, say you want to go to yahoo.com. Instead of you going directly to yahoo.com, a VPN routes you to their server and then to yahoo.com. It's kind of like a triangle.
Oh, yeah.
And I suspect that was jailbreak VPN is probably the problem. Now, how do we fix that? Well, You might be able to uninstall it. The problem with doing that is that might break it further because it may have said, all right, I'm going to change all these. In fact, I know this is what happened. I'm going to change all these settings. And sometimes when you uninstall programs, they go away, but they forget to put the settings back where they left them.
Right. Well, I did that to both programs anyway.
That's what happened. So now you got to figure out, well, what happened to my settings? So there are a few places you're going to need to go. The first, of course, is your network settings. And you're going to want to make sure that, for instance, there's no proxy turned on. That there might be a box that says use a proxy. Often that's what they do to route you. So you'll instead of going to Yahoo, you'll go to this proxy server, which is run by Jailbreak. If you disconnected Jailbreak, but you left that box checked, it's going to nowhere. That would definitely kill your internet. So look at your internet settings and at least, at the very least, turn off any proxy settings. Same thing in your browser. I don't know what browser you're using, but there may be some settings that changed in your browser, including a proxy setting there. So you want to make sure that you've turned off proxy. You don't need a proxy if you're just using your regular internet. Who is your internet service provider?
Hopper.net.
And is that DSL?
Yes.
Okay. And do you have a DSL modem?
Yes.
Is the computer directly connected to that, or is it wirelessly connected?
Directly.
Okay. So there is another possibility, because sometimes you have settings in your computer, especially if you're directly connected to the DSL modem, that are specific to your internet service provider. Usually the way I prefer to do it, and most modern ISPs do it, is they put all the settings in their router. So it doesn't. Have you tried another computer on your internet? Like a laptop or something?
I went to the library.
Yeah, but if you had another computer on your network at home.
No.
Yeah. So that would be if you had one, or you can get a friend to come over. That'd be one way to test it. Just have them plug into your router. See if it works.
I have no router.
Yeah, well, that cable modem thing.
Right.
Yeah. See if that works. So that's another thing. So if you can get the settings from your internet service provider, they at some point when you set it up, I don't know if a guy came out or if you did it by yourself, but at some point you would have gotten a piece of paper with a description of how you need to change your Windows settings to work with your internet service provider.
I did that. I called the ISP tech support, and they went through their entire protocol, and it didn't help the situation. And they said the modem I had was showing all four lights green.
Good.
And they were
good.
Should be functional, but it didn't.
I know this sounds like bad news. It's actually good news because it means your internet connection's fine. So now we know that we just have to fix the Windows 7 computer. And those are the two places you're going to go, into your network settings, and you're going to go into your browser settings. If you could get online, which you can't, there is a Windows, Microsoft has a support page, how to troubleshoot network connections, but you can't get to it. I don't know what they're thinking. I guess they assume that maybe, I don't know, you could use your phone or something. If you have a smartphone, you could fix that. So assuming that your DSL connections are appropriate, and it sounds like that your ISP did a good job of that, it's got to be something that Jailbreak VPN did. And you're just going to want to make sure that you've got all the settings right in your internet connections and in your browser. You might try System Restore. If you know what date you downloaded those programs, you can go into System Restore. Just hit the Windows key and type System Restore. And you may have usually when software gets installed, it sets a system restore point. If you could find a restore point that's from a date prior to that installation and roll it back to that, that should restore all your settings. So that'll be worth a try as well. And now we've learned our lesson, haven't we? Just because you see a program that looks like fun, might be a good idea to think twice before downloading it. It would be nice also if you had a good backup. I hope you do. This is a good opportunity for me to mention our sponsor. They've been so great to me since we started the show in 2004. I've been with them a long time. Carbonite Online Backup. I've been using them that long, and I've been telling you about them that long because they're the best way to back up. What are you looking for in a backup? Well, ideally something that works, but you don't have to think about it, right? You set it and forget it. That's Carbonite. You pay once a year. $59.99 for a year on a Mac or a PC. Everything on your computer, you don't have to think about it after that. It just automatically backs up whenever you're online, continuously. There's no backup day. It's always backed up. And your data is always in the cloud, and you can get to it any time. You log on to your Carbonite account on any computer. You could go to the library, then log on and say, is my stuff there? And you'll see it. And you say, yes, that's a good feeling. Protects you against ransomware. They have, of course, now, they've got a great line of products, not just for home, but a wonderful professional line. If you've got a business and you're not doing the backup, you don't have an IT professional, this is the right solution. In fact, a lot of IT professionals, this is the right solution too. They have this new eVault that lets you back up locally and Carbonite. Just go to Carbonite.com. Look at all the plans. Pick the one you like. And then try it free. No credit card needed. Do use my name, Leo, as the offer code. Because if you decide to buy, you'll get 2 months free with your purchase. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right with Carbonite. I got a minute left. Let's see if we can help Gloria in North Hollywood. Hello, Gloria.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
I called once before. I have no idea, no knowledge whatsoever of electronics.
Yeah.
But I'm trying. Everything is wired. I'm trying to get away from my AT&T service and use UMA. Now, I heard you speak to a previous caller about the wireless router. Someone told me.
Yeah, we spent a long time. But now, UMA doesn't require that. It does require a router. So you have one computer and it's plugged directly into the internet connection?
Right.
Yeah.
So when I go to the store, what am I looking? You said something to him about 5 gigabytes. What am
I? Yeah. So if you want Wi-Fi so you can move around. So a router by itself doesn't have to be wireless. A router just takes one internet connection and makes it usable for a variety of devices. Then they also make router wireless access points. How big is this area that you want to cover? Is it a big house?
Oh, no, no. It's just a living room in my apartment.
Small.
Right.
So you don't need to get one of these mesh systems. You just need to get a very simple wireless router. I like a couple of companies. My favorite is Asus, A-S-U-S. You can go online and buy an Asus router.
Okay.
They have dual band and tri-band routers. If you have a congested wireless network area, lots of neighbors with Wi-Fi, get the tri-band because that'll give you more choices. And they shouldn't be too expensive. Actually, hang on the line, because after we get off, I'm going to give you another place to go. We get other recommendations for this. But this is a good project. Hold on, and we'll talk some more, because I'm out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week. My friends at the Wirecutter have a really good recommendation for a router that's very inexpensive. I think it's under $100. It's from a company called TP-Link.
TP-Link.
And let me get you the name of it. Wait a minute. Now, is that? No, that's a deal. I want their reviews. Best Wi-Fi router.
AT&T owns the cable and the telephone lines in my area. That's why they're giving me hell.
Oh, yeah. They don't want you to do this, but you don't have to tell them. You can just start using the UMA.
Right.
And then later, cancel your phone service.
Right.
Just remember.
When I look for it, that I get the right thing.
Yeah. Just remember that when you're using VoIP, voice over the internet, which is what UMA does, if the power goes out or the internet goes out, so does your phone.
Okay.
Do you have a cell phone?
No, that's why I'm so far behind in technology. I have everything wired. No cell phone. The only reason I have the landline is because I haven't gotten a cell phone.
Well, but the problem is if you don't have a backup like a cell phone or a friendly neighbor and your power goes out and your internet goes out, you have no phone service. So a cell phone's a good backup in that case. The nice thing about a landline, the one you've got, is you plug into the wall and it's powered. It doesn't need to plug into the power outlet. It just plugs into the wall and it continues to work even during a blackout or an internet outage.
Oh, I don't care about that.
Okay. I got to warn you about that.
Get rid of AT&T. I hate them.
I don't blame you. I hate them too.
Nothing.
I hate them too. So the router that the Wirecutter recommends is the TP-Link Archer.
C7.
Now, it's dual band, but I think that is going to be adequate for you. It's three stream. It isn't. It's got a great range, and it's a great value because it's under $100.
Okay.
You can spend a whole lot more, but the TP-Link Archer C7 for under $100 is a very good choice.
Okay. So I don't have to go to Fry's and...
No, you get this on Amazon. You can get it... Amazon probably the best place to get it. Do you use Amazon?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. It's $85 on Amazon.
Okay.
Actually, let me give you an offer code. Because Wirecutter is an offer code. 15 TPLC7.
TLC.
No, TPLC7. TPLC7.
15 TPLC7.
That's 15% off. That'll get it down to $85.
Okay, great.
And then you just keep calling me every time you have a question, okay?
I will. Oh, I've been doing that, but because of my lack of knowledge of technology, I mean, all these people who call you sound so intelligent.
No, don't, please. I want more people who just want help. I don't want anybody to feel intimidated. That's not good.
Yeah. Okay, I'll let you know when I get it.
Thank you, Gloria.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.